Welcome to The Mist, a show about mysterious stuff, and me demystifying it. My goal with the show is to find things that are hard to know, and then get to know them, and then tell you about them. Things like drugs, cults, and cultures. So over the course of this show, I'll be looking into psychedelic and recreational substances to see what they are, how people use them. I'll be examining controversial and fringe religious groups, sort of lifting the veil on things that you don't see very often. And I'll be taking a crack at culture, too. I'll look at anything that makes us, us, anything mysterious. And today is about one drug known to some as the spirit molecule. It's DMT, or dimethyltryptamine. Now, if I had started out by saying, let's demystify shrooms, we'd probably at least be starting out on the same page. You may think they're the funky mushrooms you eat, they make you act funny, maybe see swirls, but I'm betting most don't really know what I'm talking about when I say DMT. And I'm betting that because I spent some time asking around.
Test, test, test.
Ray! I who took this video?
Do you know what dimethyltryptamine is?
Not.
Have you ever heard of DMT before?
I have not.
What would you guess it is?
A chemical and something.
Any guess as to what it may do?
I don't know. A pesticide?
Department of Motorcycle Transportation.
Say that again?
Department of the Motorcycle Transportation.
I have no idea.
If I said it stood for dimethyltryptamine, does that help?
I'm not a chemist, so I have no idea.
No, I have no idea.
Is it a pollutant?
Is it a drug? Oh, really? Okay, I don't know what it stands for, no.
If I said dimethyltryptamine, does it help you guess what the drug may do?
Do you trip out?
Just a bit of a spoiler, DMT does make you trip out, and it is considered a powerful drug by those who use it. But there are a lot of drugs. There's uppers, there's downers. What is DMT? Does it fall somewhere on that spectrum of amping you up or putting you down mentally and physically? And also, what does it look like? Like, if you were to hold it in your hand, could you identify it? And do you have to smoke it? Or can you inject it? Do you snort it? And also, once you get the DMT inside you, what does tripping out actually mean? Like, what does it feel like? And what's going on in there, in you? So these are the questions I have. So to help find some answers, I brought in my producer and friend, Leah. She and I did a lot of demystifying together in college. We both chose the very lucrative path of religious studies. And something I really like about Leah, why I brought her in for this episode, is she has a healthy curiosity for weird stuff. Like I do. Do you have any more questions?
I have tons of questions.
Cool. Well, we'll figure those out then, I suppose.
The history of DMT is pretty obscure, and while that does make it pretty fun and intriguing, it's also hard to report on. The earliest mention of it I could find is in the late 8th century in Chile, and historically it spanned from South America to as far north as Haiti. But even now, its complete effects aren't fully known, and a lot of the time when I hear or read anything about DMT, it has to start with, based on our current understanding. So there's still a lot to understand. But one thing we can know, it's kind of picking up. According to the U.S. National Survey on Drug Use and Health, use of synthetic DMT more than doubled from 2006 to 2012. And the DMT as we know it today was first proven to be a hallucinogen back in the 50s by a Hungarian chemist. He didn't experience the effects at first because he was ingesting it. But this chemist, named Steven Cesara, he decided to then inject it in himself. And it worked. I think of Cesara's work as sort of the first bookend in DMT research, of course with its invention. But the 60s and 70s that were in between, they were sort of in a legal to quasi-legal state. Depending on which rule you follow, DMT was made illegal sometime around 1970, 1971. But the other bookend of research was in the 90s. Rick Strassman is a psychiatrist at the University of New Mexico, and in the 90s, he was there administering DMT to human subjects, like Cesar did. But Strassman gave more than 400 doses. His goal was to separate human consciousness from body and measure the effects of various doses. And a lot of what we know now about DMT, like its role in dreams and death, is based on his research in the 90s with synthetic DMT. And it's important to call it that, by the way, synthetic, because there is naturally occurring DMT. It's in me right now as I'm talking, and it's in you right now while you're listening to my voice. It's in the pineal gland between your eyes, just about dead center of your brain. And it's also in plants, like tangerines. If you go to the store and you buy a tangerine, you've just purchased an illegal substance. Sort of. You're not going to get arrested for the tangerines. But if you're carrying around synthetic DMT that got you high, you would get arrested, because it's a Schedule 1 drug. And that means, purportedly, that it has a high potential for abuse and doesn't have any medical use. Heroin is also a Schedule 1 drug. But one of the things that stands out to me about being a Schedule 1 drug is the high potential for abuse. DMT just doesn't seem like that type of drug, to me, frankly. The users I spoke to for this story and the accounts that I've read didn't indicate DMT is a fun high to revisit very often. And in that survey I mentioned before that said people are using DMT more, it also found those users had a low urge to use it again. It's not a way to soften the world you know. It's more to take you to the worlds you don't know. So, of course, I had to find people who went to those worlds. We removed the last names of those who asked because, again, DMT is illegal.
My name is Caitlin Thompson, and I have been interested in psychedelic drugs since I was 18.
My name is Ashley, and I'm a licensed acupuncturist and herbalist in Southern California.
My name is Brandon, and I work as a biologist for a biotech company here in San Diego.
The first time I smoked DMT, we put it in a bubbler, and we put some marijuana, I think at the bottom of the bowl so that the powder that we put on top wasn't going to fall through. And you have to be very careful when you smoke it, because if you burn it, then it just kind of goes away and it doesn't get into your lungs and doesn't work. So it was me and three friends, and I'm in this comfortable environment, and there's lots of cool psychedelic art and tapestries around. There's no music. It was made completely silent.
When I was in college, I smoked DMT. I was in this like rundown apartment with my abusive ex-boyfriend, and there was spiders, and it was this moldy, gross place. I mean, you would call it hell.
It was in our college apartment, so just sitting in our room, me and my roommate. DMT generally best metabolized through your lungs, and so especially with such a small amount, we ended up smoking it. It's like a crystalline powder, sort of an off-white color. Like if you'd crushed up quartz, it's got that sort of mineral crystalline type of structure, an off-white color, somewhere between white and yellow.
Crystally powder, and it can range from, pretty freaking white to a yellow to even like a darker maroon brown type of gooey substance. So it really depends on the purity. Synthetic forms can also be manufactured, and they usually come out pretty pristinely white.
Within the first few moments, there's a rapid rush of the come up. You really feel more of a presence of your own body. A certain
heaviness
comes over you. There was almost a sensation of movement, whereas sort of I was sitting still, but the visual affects that I was seeing were sort of moving past me rapidly. And the room essentially at that point dissolved into a tunnel of prismatic color. The closest thing I could describe it to is the final sequence of A Space Odyssey 2001, where it's just, rapid flashes of color moving by, in prismatic shapes, sort of deconstructions of colors, and it just keeps pushing by, like at this sort of seemingly, the sense of motion, but without any inertia.
When I took it, I couldn't really breathe for one, and it hurt to take in. I did have this profound insight about, you know, how we're all connected.
Went ahead and smoked it, and it came on incredibly fast. Like, it hits you so rapidly that your first thought, I think almost every time, is like, oh shit, I'm high, like already. It can be really overwhelming and really frightening because it just comes on so strong. I remember the sort of pixelation and the color and the melting of all the stuff in my visual field was totally distorted. And then I decided to close my eyes. I remember hearing this like buzzing sound. It's like zzzz. I saw this shape that was almost like an eye, like a vertical eye where the points are, you know, top and bottom. And it was like a tunnel in a way. I was able to look through it and I saw some like really trippy, they almost looked like machines, but they had an organic feel to them. Like maybe they were even other life forms, like almost like these little worm tunnel things. And there's all these swirling colors and geometric patterns and things are shifting, a lot of movement and just a lot of confusion. I'm like, what is, I don't know what any of this is. I don't understand what's going on. I kind of just was existing. I was hearing a lot of interesting noises too, in addition to the buzzing, like kind of like alien sounding, like bloop, 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 bloop. Almost like you're underwater, these weird little noises. You get this sensation, it feels like you're sedated. Like your body feels sedated in this like euphoric, heavy relaxation. And your breathing becomes so calming and deep at the same time. And you realize that your breath is like the only stability that you have at this point. You have no idea what's going on. You're totally dissociated from your body and from what's happening around you, and all you have is your breath, and that you realize that's kind of what makes you human, is the fact that you can oscillate with your breath in and out of this reality in this body. I mean, it's sometimes kind of hard to bring the information back because it happens so quickly and you're totally out of it when you're there, and then you return sort of to your normal state and you don't necessarily remember any of the things that you saw or experienced. That's pretty common. So then I kind of came back down.
I didn't feel a lot of cogent thought during the experience. It was, you know, these visual aspects were very, you know, sort of sensorily overwhelming. So I was just sort of experiencing as it was happening rather than, you know, having a rational, you know, construction of it in my mind during the experience. And as fast as it came up, it sort of denuded just as quickly. The shapes and colors disappeared and then the room sort of resolved itself. And then there was a period of about 5 minutes where clearly returning to baseline, but still having that energetic feeling in the peripheral nervous system. Definitely very, very intense, very, very rapid onset, especially compared to, you know, more traditional psychedelic experiences where one has more time to sort of process the different stages of the development. Once they had reached that crescendo and started coming back down, then I was capable of speech and movements.
And it was only about 10 minutes.
From the onset to the come up, the experience and then returning down to baseline is all massively accelerated and compressed. It's less than 15 minutes.
10 or 15 minutes. It's a very short-lived experience. They sometimes call it the businessman's drug.
And now, let's rewind to the 60s. I mentioned before that when the Hungarian chemist came to the U.S., it was in the 60s, but that's also when Timothy Leary, a famous psychedelics proponent of the time, was publicly experimenting with DMT and similar drugs. Leary and his cohort were working to solve a problem during this time. And that problem was bringing information back from the DMT trip. The mind goes through a lot under the influence of DMT at high doses, as you heard, and it's really hard, some say even impossible, to recount everything that happens during those 15 minutes. So Leary and his team developed a typewriter specifically for somebody tripping. They called it the experiential typewriter. So I got with Leah, and we reenacted one of Leary's experiments based on a recorded account that I found. And these experiments were often recorded in what Leary called the time chamber, which was an attic in his Massachusetts home. So it was an attic. And just as a note, we did not take DMT for this reenactment. Just so that's clear.
Where are you now?
I'm in a bubbling beaker of the Cosmic Alchemist. No, now softly falling stardust exploding the branches of the stellar ivory birch tree. Ralph and Susan, beautiful orange lobsters, watching me gently. Face shattered into stained glass mosaic. Dr. Tiffany Lobster holds out the casket of trapezoidal sections. Where is Venusian ecstasy key? Where is the key for the stellar explosion of the year 3000?
Minute 2. Where are you now?
There squatting next to me are two magnificent insects, Venusian crickets, holding a gem-encrusted box with undulating, glowing sections. Incredible. Dr. Ruby Emerald Cricket smiles, celestial radiance from the light center. Light is life.
Minute 8. Where are you now?
In the heart of the sun's hydrogen explosion. Okay, so does this make any part of the DMT experience clearer for you?
I feel like I understood this completely.
Did it really make sense to you?
No.
Yeah, the lobsters are where they kind of lost me. Partly because, and like the crickets, because it's inconsistent with what we heard from other people who talked about their DMT experiences.
Although nobody else was recording from the inside.
That's true. It was all whatever they recollected at the end, after they were done.
In a weird way, it does sort of make sense to me. But I think it's because I tend to dream in a very schizo, non-linear sort of fashion. I don't usually have normal, like, storyline dreams where, like, normal things happen. I think I just have DMT trips, which makes the sense.
It does make the sense due to the DMT that's in our brains. It just sounds like a very weirdly recalled dream that's a hodgepodge of things, not like the recollections that we heard from other people who told us about it far after the fact.
Although I do feel like I had this dream when I was in preschool.
This dream that we just read?
I don't remember them being lobsters. I feel like they were aliens, but, you know, I was very young.
Usually
I don't know if I would have recognized lobster people.
Usually I think of lobsters and aliens and, like, crickets, things with exoskeletons, kind of similarly. Like, it's a big lobster cricket thing that kind of seems like it would be an alien. And there are, like, it is pretty common for people in their DMT experiences to encounter what they think are, like, extraterrestrial beings or aliens or something like that. So that kind of makes sense.
Still doesn't sound scientific in an attic, but whatever.
Although considering the 60s, it wasn't illegal yet. So one wonders, why is it in an attic? Although if I were to do a psychedelic drug, I would probably want it to be in a safe space, like an attic.
Do attics feel safe to you? Does it sound like, where's a safe, comfy place? An
I think
attic.
It'd be, no. I think of an attic as a place where you can control a lot of sound and light, which I think is crucial for a DMT trip because you're not necessarily interacting with all the stuff that's going on around you, like a mushroom trip. You want things to be as controlled as possible so you can do an inward journey.
Fair enough.
So that's why I think an attic sounds okay. Scary, kind of. It depends on the attic. Some attics are warm and homey to me, I think.
Have you been in a warm and homey attic?
Yeah.
Well, like somebody had like a room up there?
No.
Like a television?
No. It was, I think in upstate New York, it was my grandma's attic. It had like that grandma smell to it. And it was just a bunch of old family stuff that was there. But it was in like nice wooded attic. It was next to a barn. I think it was nice.
Let's explore this further. Tell me what your grandma's smell is.
The grandma smell, it's kind of like, I want to say dusty and kind of mothy, but also with maybe a hint of perfume and kind of like how it smells when you go into your family house, like a mix of all those things. Because, you know, when you go to a different house, it smells different if you go to, like, a stranger's house, generally.
Totally. I was just wondering what your grandma's attic smells like.
There's a very
like
distinct smell. There was this chest that I had in my family's house for a long time that smelled just like my grandma's attic.
This will come back to you in your ayahuasca trip, by the way. You will be in your grandmother's attic.
That would be very
smelling
interesting.
Smelling her jeanette, which is old lady perfume.
I was about to say. I thought it was a different language for something else that's very similar to jeanette.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Je ne t'aime. So.
So between the typewriter experiment and the people we talked to, we understand a decent amount about what it's like when you're taken to that other place after ingesting or injecting DMT. The place with the alien noises and the big colorful tunnel and the strong connection to a larger, otherworldly place. But when you're there, you're still here. You're sitting in your bedroom or in your ex-boyfriend's dirty apartment or at the University of New Mexico. Your body is going through a lot while it's sitting there, and we wanted to find that out too. That guy we heard just a bit ago, Brandon, the medical biologist, he took a variant of DMT called 5-MeO-DMT, and his roommate did it too. I asked him what it was like from the outside. What's happening to his roommate's body while his mind is somewhere far away?
Yeah, from an outsider's perspective, you can definitely sort of feel the intensity of the experience that the other person is feeling. You know, he's very quiet, sitting still. It does require a certain amount of concentration. I could definitely see that on his face. There wasn't a lot of, you know, wacky activity. You know, it was very, you know, again, maybe it's just because of the power of the experience, you know, it required a lot of concentration to just sort of be in the moment.
So that's what's happening on the surface. It sounds pretty calm, really. It's concentrated, focused, and meditative. You smoke it, and then your mind is rocketed to this other plane of consciousness, and your body is still, quiet, and your face is focused. So then I had to know what's happening with the rest of the body. The outside is calm, but there has to be more that's going on in there.
There's a massive amount of pupil dilation that happens almost immediately. Accelerated heartbeats, definitely like palm sweating, maybe generalized sweating as well. In layman's terms, it's sort of an activation of your body's fight or flight response. And so, you know, it sort of gets in this energized state because, you know, it knows it's, your body knows that something is amiss. And so they, so all these sort of evolutionary mechanisms to, you know, to prepare the body for, you know, again, the fight or flight, these are inherently activated. Since you're smoking, it's a very rapid route of admission. You know, it enters the alveoli in your lungs and gets into your bloodstream and then quickly goes into your brain. So it's at that point when the somatic part of the experience starts to develop. Essentially, the neurons in your brain, they send, you know, information through electrical signals.
What Brandon's
but
saying
at the junctions
is,
between,
essentially, your brain
neuron,
is doing its thing. It's sending signals like usual. Everything's firing off. But these paths where the signals are traveling, there are gaps. And it's at these gaps where the traveling signals are susceptible. There's space there. So the DMT compound finds these gaps and binds itself there so the signals can't travel past the gaps as they usually do. They get stuck. So the signals sit there at the gap, blocked by the DMT, and they keep moving. They get scrambled because they're moving, but they can't get across. And that's what makes the auditory and visual hallucinations, the scrambling of normal signals in our brain. The hallucinations really pick up when the signal's blocked long enough for the mechanism of the drug to take effect. That's the peak of the DMT trip. And after the drug is pretty much spent, your brain's normal caretakers are able to break down the DMT like it would other neurotransmitters passing along these gaps. Remember before when I said you could go to the store, buy a tangerine, and have DMT? Well, obviously we're eating tangerines and oranges and everything else that has DMT and not tripping. Our brains aren't scrambling to result in hallucinations or anything when we eat citrus. But there are ways to trip off DMT by ingestion, which we'll get to on a later episode because you need a specific kind of inhibitor to make that work, to ingest DMT and have any effects. But some people say there are other ways to have a trip and you don't have to consume anything. You could go to your local park and join a drum circle.
So you listen to the drum, which activates the pineal gland to stimulate dimethyltryptamine naturally from the brain, and you learn how to journey and view these images and speak together.
That's Ashley, who we heard from earlier. She was the one with the more nightmarish DMT experience. Part of what Ashley does for her work is finding natural ways to activate DMT that's already in our brains. And she says when she goes the natural route like this to access DMT, and with some training, she can actually get a more satisfying experience than ingesting DMT.
You know, also, again, it's the way that you hold it and set it up. You can still have the visions, but they're not as effective as if you listen to the drum and you have a training in terms of how to navigate those realms. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people take DMT, they don't have training in terms of navigation. So they're just kind of there and looking around, and, you know, anyone can just kind of like, oh, there's a butterfly, and da, da, da. And wow.
I did find something to back this up. There was a study by Stanford professor Melinda Maxfield where she exposed subjects to three different types of drumming. There was shamanic drumming, which is about 4 to 4.5 beats per second. I Ching drumming, which is a variant of shamanic drumming, at 3 to 4 beats per second. And free drumming, with no sustained rhythmic pattern. Interestingly, the study notes I found online had a specific category for a shamanic state of consciousness, and the subjects reported that they did experience that state. About 4 beats per second for 15 minutes was the best pace and time to make these experiences, to evoke DMT. The study showed that after those 15 minutes, the subjects were able to have a natural, transcendental experience. Not that it's the same experience as one who vaporizes DMT or injects it to break that psychedelic threshold like Strassman was trying to find, but maybe you can bend the threshold a bit. Well, maybe drum circles aren't for you. Maybe they're intimidating to pry into. Maybe you just don't see yourself as a drum circle type of person, like Leah. Or, like a lot of my dearest friends, perhaps you're an introvert who doesn't like meeting strangers. If one of these is you, I have a few options for you to try out. You could download an app, like I found one called Drum Journey. And if you just Google around, you can also find a lot of YouTube videos on shamanic drumming. Or you could take a good, hearty sleep. Rick Strassman suggests that DMT is also released during REM sleep, so a very deep state of sleep, and also suggests that DMT is likely that engine that drives your dreams to give you all the fun and maybe sometimes scary imagery that occurs while you're sleeping. And in searching around, I found there's also a common practice where people use extra melatonin. They ingest it before they sleep to enhance the trippiness of dreams even more. But of course, you don't need melatonin. Tonight, as you're falling asleep, as your arms get heavy and your chest grows warm, your legs and your lower back start to sink into your mattress, you're getting ready for a DMT trip. A natural one. This hard-to-pronounce mystery drug so many people don't even know about is always around. It's in the orange you bought at the store, it's in the tree you played on as a kid, and it's theorized to be released during your birth and likely to be the last thing you experience when you die. It's the stuff dreams are made of, and it's concocted in underground labs and the lab in your head. And it's a key ingredient in something else.
When you're sitting there and you're puking and you're shitting your pants and, you know, in front of all your friends and stuff like that, it really puts you in your place sometimes. Not in a bad way, but, you know, I think it's good for some people.
We'll get into that next time on The Mist. The Mist is by me, Nate John. Producer is Leah Gregory. The DMT experience collage you heard was mixed by the brilliant Kurt Conan. Music by Ben Sound and Poddington Bear. Theme music by Kevin MacLeod. Scripting help, warm hugs, and dinner were provided by Justin Hudnall and Jennifer Corley. More help for this episode was given by Emily Burns, Leo Castaneda, and Abby Wade. If you like this show, please subscribe and please leave it a review. That helps more people find it. And I want to know what you like and what you don't. So if you have suggestions of stories you'd like to hear, anything mysterious, but mostly about drugs, cults, or cultures, please let me know. Or if you have a story you'd like to tell, please do. I'm anxious to hear it. Send it to mistpodcast@gmail.com, spelled just like it sounds. Or tweet me at Nate John. And check the show notes for a link to 15 uninterrupted minutes of drums, experimentally proven to alter your mental state. So you can feel free to try it out for yourself. And of course, I'd love to hear how that goes. So you can send me an email to the address I just said. All right. Bye for real. And thank you.
I don't know how to... What is dimethyltryptamine?
Not so much. Dimethyltryptamine. Nope.
DMT? That's funny. DMT. Shit. That's a good one.